are at Conway Natives. It's another local hero spotlight with Claire Morneau from CISA, the local hero folks, and Lillian Jackman. Claire, you know Lillian's daughter, as do I, so this is like coming home to your friend's mom's house.
Yeah, I think I was last here in high school.
But no snacks. No snacks.
Oh, come on. No snacks.
Are you kidding? You got snacks growing all over this place.
We can browse.
And you've got these signs all over that say, growing wild for pollinators, be part of the movement. And I'll also say this weekend's a big bee fest in Greenfield. There'll be plenty of stuff about that on the air today. But tell us about Conway Natives.
Well, I have been on this particular piece of land for 25 years. And ran a nursery called Wilder Hill Gardens. So people tend to know me from Wilder Hill Gardens. I work as a landscape designer and grow my own stock, which is kind of unusual. But I like to grow my own material. Now, I was noticed I was getting older at some point after 25 years. And also Wilder Hill Gardens existed 10 years before that. In another site on borrowed land. Mm-hmm. I lived in a small cabin. Somebody lent me a field to be a grower. The exchange was I kept the field clear. I could grow whatever I liked. And eventually I built a little cabin in the back because I had a very strong desire to own my own land and to settle. But the numbers didn't really work because I had three children. Mm-hmm. So I built a cabin, and I'd been to Jamaica by then to work as a nurse and observed how people lived. So I built a small cabin, and I lived there for 10 years without water and electricity. I mean, I brought in water.
Yeah.
But,
you gotta get real thirsty after 10 years.
You gotta have water. You gotta take an occasional shower. But I had a lot of friends with hot water. And that's how I saved the money to buy this land. I thought, how will this look going into the future? So the goal of Conway Natives is to focus on native plants and to lean more into the broader ecology of being a grower and being a landscape designer. And theoretically, to be less work, to scale down.
Uh-huh.
But the response has been great.
Opening weekend was this past weekend?
Opening weekend was great. I'd say 50% of the people who came, I had never seen before.
That's great.
And I'm not super at marketing, in fact.
And this is a destination, we'll say.
Yes.
Not on any sort of main route.
We have a saying in Conway that it takes a half an hour to get from Conway to Northampton, and it takes 2 years to get from Northampton to Conway.
Well, why don't you show us around, Conway Natives? Show us some of the plants that you're growing here.
Okay, so there'll be a mix, of course, of natives and non-natives, but we'll focus on the natives, of course. Here's a gorgeous Fothergilla, and that's the straight-up native. I mean, you can just imagine this is pollinator heaven.
Oh, yeah.
My design sensibility in terms of plants, personally, is I really favor Dr. Seuss.
I was going to say, it's Seussian. Are you
the Lorax?
I might be. Uh-huh. I might be the Lorax.
I speak for the trees.
So I just think this is delightful, and this is a native. I mean, my goodness, look at that.
Yeah, Truffula trees. They are native to Conway. Tree.
This is a stand of high bush blueberries, also a native plant. And this is a pick-your-own operation.
Nice.
And hopefully that frees me up a little bit to go a little bit backward in time and grow more of my own food crops. If it doesn't want to be a big moneymaker, that's okay. And that's where diversity comes into play. Native plants, the market is there. So that was kind of an astute move on my part. Well, I noticed that in my landscape design business, which was really, you know, started out as a conventional landscape design business. I studied horticulture at the University of Connecticut, fresh out of high school, and used all kinds of plants, some natives, but mostly cultivars. And in the recent years, I'd suggest to people, I'd say, what do you think about using native plants in this project? And I think everybody said yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm working with other growers and other native plant nurseries. My idea is that we all work together to promote more and more native plants, get them into the ground and into people's yards. So far, so good.
And we are at Conway Natives with Lillian Jackman, and it is a beautiful location. All your landscaping prowess and your dog here jumping up on Khalees.
You can say off, yeah.
Oh, no, don't.
There's totally beautiful welcome. Stonework. Okay. There's, what are these, like, are those stone stoves over there?
Phone.
Those are stupas.
Oh, wow, cool.
So those are stupas. That's Buddhist sacred sculpture. You might not recognize them. They're different than the stupas you see around here, for example, on 5 and 10. The one on 5 and 10, that's a traditional Tibetan Buddhist stupa. These are based on the stupas that they build in Indonesia and Vietnam, which are often in multiples, often just rising up out of the woods, or the woods grew up around them, and they're more like cairns.
Yeah. And you've got two of them here with the Tibetan sort of prayer flags draped between them.
I know. And they were built by Tibetans, very strong, hardworking Tibetan men on their day off. God bless them. They'd come at 7 a.m., work for 5 hours, pay them cash, give them a little snack. They don't like sweets. Bread, cheese, and fruit did the trick. So let's look at a couple of native plants. That's an eastern redbud, Circus canadensis. And that's all that beautiful pink. You'll see another one behind the stupas.
They should call them pink buds instead of red buds. Yeah.
They call them eastern red buds, and they are pinker, almost a fuchsia.
Yeah.
The other thing I like about it, oh, that's not so good.
It seems like your dog has gotten either your lunch or is that compost?
That compost. Looks like a compost bag.
That's so naughty. I think we're just going to ignore that. Where? One thing I've learned is, you don't chase a dog and you don't chase chickens.
Yes.
You have
to. You're Rocky.
Well, what do I got to chase a chicken for? It's embarrassing, you know? First, because I said so.
So let's see. Another native right here is a native form of viburnum, and that's highbush cranberry. Quite tall.
Do they grow berries as well?
Yes. You can actually see the remnants of a berry right here. So full of these clusters of red berries.
And are those edibles like regular cranberries?
Those are for birds.
Okay.
They resemble cranberries, mm-hmm. but they're not for us to eat. Some of the berries, like an aronia, they can also be used as medicine. But at some point, if you want, I can talk about these classes offering
please.
Starting next week.
So tell us about them. Tell us what the classes are.
Have you always offered classes?
I do. I've done a lot of teaching. They start next Sunday, 3 consecutive Sundays. So Sunday, May 17th, all classes are 10 to 12. The first one is Starting Native Plants from Seed. This one is going to be really fun. And I have 6 types of native seed mix. So essentially, I'm going to teach people how to do that meadow thing, but in a way that actually works. Pretty much everyone has bought a can of seeds and thrown it on the ground, mm-hmm. and that's the last that, God bless you,
yeah.
God bless you, and that's the last they saw of their meadow. But this is a way that really works. So you sow the seed, mix seed, and people will have their choice of the different types. We've got perennial mixes, annual mixes, pollinator mixes, and sow them in peat pots, and then I'll do a bit of teaching about how to make it successful. That's Sunday, May 17th. On the 24th, vegetative native plant propagation. So we'll start with a tour and identify plants for people, kind of get them in the neighborhood. And then this is a thing that most gardeners should get more comfortable doing, where you dig up a plant and you divide it. People have a lot of fear around that. So we'll have several plants and we'll divide them, talk to people a little bit about the difference between sun and shade plants, and then people will have plants to take home. And then Sunday, May 31st, transforming your yard into a native plant sanctuary. That's the one that people are getting excited about. I'd love it if people would take one of the prior ones just to get a little bit of a body of knowledge, but we'll be fine. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really pride myself on being able to teach people wherever they are. So this is for people who are tired of mowing their lawns or have a perennial garden. They want to start introducing plants a little bit at a time. Everyone will have their different idea, different concept. I'm encouraging people, bring photographs of your land if you've got a plot plan, and I'll just introduce them to the concept of developing a plant list and then getting that onto paper. And people have a tremendous amount of fear about that part where they take their idea and put it on paper, and we're just going to blow right through that. And, you know, we're going to go back to everybody being 6. Your ideas have value. You've got your plant list. You know, we've talked about sun, shade, soil, and they'll just have the beginnings of a design or a concept. And that can be quite useful for people wanting to make a transition into native plants.
Last weekend was your opening weekend. What was popular with the people that came here? Like, what was it that they were clamoring for?
What were they excited about? Elderberries. Sold some blueberries, a lot of the herbaceous ornamentals, the ones that look kind of pretty in a pot. Mm-hmm. Let's see, people liked bee balm. Let's go over there and take a look.
Yeah.
We've got native shade plants. We've got some ferns. Uvularia, which is a beautiful name for a plant. Rudbeckia. Sedge, a humble-looking plant. It's one of the native grasses, but extremely useful. I used this on a big project in Shelburne Falls where there was an erosion problem. It likes to grow in a wet place. It'll turn into a big, strong plant that will hold its ground, and it was pretty successful. This plant here is our native nut. For the local food people, it is challenging to find nuts that we can grow here. Like Claire, do we have any local nut growers?
There are some people who are growing chestnuts, but I think these are all relatively newer businesses. It's still a bit of an experimental thing. Like, how reliable will these trees be, and how much will they produce?
And they've been hybridized or brought in from, like, China and other places where, you know, when the chestnut blight wiped everything out here, these are trying to revive it, but using a different kind of cultivar. But what is this nut?
This is an American hazelnut, so this is our native nut. It's a beautiful plant. You can see it's, you know, things are just waking up, but it's a lovely plant, matures at about 6 feet, multi-stemmed, and it has a lot of nuts. And the trick is all the critters are interested in your nuts, too.
I must not fear. Fear is the mind killer.
So keep an eye on them. When they're ready, pick them, bring them inside. And they're relatively small. They're about the size of a maybe large grape. So you'll have to do a little work to get the nut out, but they're very tasty and nutritious.
Nice.
And attractive. Behind it is a service berry. Now there we go, Khalees. That's a plant that people are very excited about because of the book.
The Robin Wall Kimmerer book, The Service Berry.
There we
go.
Very
short read. Wonderful little read.
Thank you for the...
I had no idea about the book. I knew about the berry before.
Yeah. You need the book. You need the book. Thanks for the mentioning the author.
It's almost like a sequel to Braiding Sweetgrass, her other book.
Yes.
She's one of the people that does a great job using indigenous tradition that she grew up with, interweaving the science that comes apart from the indigenous tradition and weaving them all together.
Excellent. Everybody should read Braiding Sweetgrass and the title of the...
The Service Berry.
The Service Berry. Okay, that is a service berry. So that's a plant that people are excited about. And also, I like to use it in the landscaping. It's just a lovely plant.
And you can eat it.
Yep.
And there's one right outside of our station at NEPM. So come and get a snack.
Wow. It's not producing as much as it was our first couple of years at the station. But yeah, like, the berries come out and I sometimes have a chance to get them before the birds do.
Now, I'm going to put in a pitch or maybe a defense for using some cultivars, and that's an issue of great debate in the native plant community, and I appreciate all aspects of it. But as a landscape designer, I do use some cultivars, and this would be a reason. Now, this is red-stemmed dogwood, and you have probably seen older examples of this everywhere you drive, and they're 16 feet tall, and they're not red, they're brown. That's the straight-up native that would be just great in the woods someplace, but not so good in your backyard. And the only place they're red is on the new growth. So this is a form called Arctic Fire, same size and shape of flowers. So we would hope it had the same benefit to pollinators. Can breed back to the native, so that's an indication that they are, in fact, the same species. Mm-hmm. But it stays much shorter, and the stems do stay red, which is why people want it in the first place. Cultivars that can be useful in the home landscape. And that's kind of the angle I'm working toward, is getting more homeowners to transition their yards to natives. And I've got a couple of projects underway, one in Northampton and one in Florence, where we're doing exactly that. There's one in Northampton. Lovely people. The man was tired of mowing his lawn, and it was actually a healthy lawn. It was pretty good looking. And we destroyed his lawn last fall. But we did it in a really ecologically sound way. So another thing I do in the nursery, besides growing and marketing plants, is I use a remarkably little amount of petroleum to keep this operation going. It's like measured in like a gallon and a half a year for my 20-year-old rototiller. I mean, I do have a pickup truck. But I use remarkably little petroleum, and I recycle a tremendous amount of plastic pots. So you'll see a lot of plastic pots, and I didn't buy these. So I'm kind of a recycling place for plastic pots. There's a lot of different ways to do it, but if you have time on your side and muscle, like I looked at that lawn and I thought, damn, it's healthy. And I thought about using a sod stripper. And I thought, oh, we're just going to take all that organic matter right off the top, produce a ton of waste that we have to haul away. And it's just so wasteful and use a bunch of petroleum. And I thought, there's got to be a better way. And there's a way you can do it that's a little bit risky, because you're relying on time and you're relying on the temperatures in the winter. And that involved, first I took my little rototiller and a gallon of gas and tilled it, shallow tilling, just kind of insult the grass, disturb it. And then I had two of my helpers pick just grass clumps and roots out. Not entirely clean, but just, you know, get a lot of that out. And then we brought in Jim Graves with his truck of compost and put a lot of compost on top. You can't be shy if you're going to do this technique. And I would say fully 3 to 4 inches of compost.
Wow.
Yeah, a lot, a lot. Because basically we're fertilizing the garden for a long time. So when I finish a project, people don't have to think about fertilizing for 5-6 years. And then we brought in the hay. Now, not everybody can tolerate this part, that you have to use a lot of hay, because you're creating a lateral compost pile. So you're going to suppress all the weeds. You're going to heat it up with the decomposition of the hay and the activity of the compost, and also the decomposition of what you've left in the original soil. Mm-hmm. So that's all cooking and heating up. And then winter comes and the temperatures go down to 10, 0. And so that alternate freezing, thawing, heating up, woo. And it's a little risky because you never know what the winter's going to bring you and how strong that grass was. So when I went back in the spring, before I even went into the house to talk to the folks, I got out of my truck with a pitchfork and I lifted up the hay and I said, yeah, we did it. And so that's a project that's underway, and it's going really well. And it's just going to be straight up natives. They've got a service berry, a hazelnut, we've got Solomon seal, and then segueing to the, you know, the big, bold, meadowy, bright flowers.
That's great.
All right. That's my story of decomposition.
Well, I'm struck by, you know, I think a lot of people have heard about the concept of native plants and the importance of native plants for pollinators and the bees and that sort of thing. But really walking around, a lot of these plants are probably relatively, I mean, there are some surprises, but a lot of them are going to be pretty familiar to people who garden, mm-hmm. like blueberries, elderberries, echinacea, bee balm, ginger. Like, it's not exactly a totally different universe mm-hmm. that we're talking about here, even though there's always a lot to learn.
Good point, Claire. Good point. Yeah. It's a nice segue into that world. And for me, it's not all or nothing. You know, if you're going to introduce 2 or 3 native shrubs into your landscape and a few herbaceous plants and play with the meadow thing and a little piece of your vegetable garden, mm-hmm. that's wonderful. So I'm here to encourage people to do that and support them and educate them. Yeah.
And you've got a good opportunity these coming Sundays in May, too, to come and get firsthand experience and get some ask some questions.
Exactly. Next 3 Sundays, rain or shine. It'll be a good practical class. We'll, you know, it'll be hands-on and productive for everybody. Now, an important part of any agricultural endeavor is animals. I have in the past raised pigs. I don't do that anymore because they're so heavy. Mm-hmm. But this is the chicken coop, which is just about to be remodeled. My son called for Mother's Day, and we had a long conversation about the new chicken pen he's going to build me when he comes visit. But I want one that looks like an aviary, like when you go to the zoos. Yeah. I want it to be, it's going to be 6-sided. So we talked all about how that can happen when he comes. If you look in there, you can see kind of the messes that I'm digging out. The most beautiful 6-year-old compost out of that pen. Mm-hmm. It's just incredible. And that's what I use on my food crops. Mm-hmm. Okay, so there's a relationship between having animals that poop a lot and eat your waste and give you wonderful, nutritious eggs, which are just a gorgeous food. They're very agreeable to my body. So that's the chicken pen. And you'll say, oh, you don't have any chickens. But right upstairs in my laundry room, there are 50 chicks. In a kiddie swimming pool. I thought I ordered 30. my first grandson who's just about to graduate from college, I needed a place to put them. His kiddie pool has been underneath my barn for 20 years. And I looked at it and it's so dirty. And I said, all right, Lillian, you need to conserve plastic. You're not going to buy a new one. So I washed that damn thing and I've got 50 chicks in the kiddie swimming pool under lights.
Recycling plastic pots, that's your thing.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And pools.
And pools.
Exactly. But as soon as it warms up, they will go in the coop under lights. Mm-hmm. But at this point, they're little babies.
But I did have questions for you about seed saving, like how many of the things that you're growing here and selling here provide seeds that you're able to continue making stock with? Mm-hmm. And is it harder than just getting starts from someone else?
Oh, of course, of course. I do get the shrubs, I get starts from somebody else. I get little baby shrubs. The rest of the plants, I propagate all the plants on those benches. I propagated from my own beds and fields. But you can collect the seeds from your native plants. That's where it's helpful to have a little knowledge of botany, because people say, well, when do I collect the seed? And it's really just about observation and knowing something about the life cycle of a plant. People sometimes, they know remarkably little. Like some people don't know that fruit comes from flowers. You know that, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so it's good to know a little bit of the life cycle. For people who come and work for me, I often mentor them into their own businesses, and depending on what they're thinking about doing, I often recommend that they take a botany class, just to have an understanding of plants. It allows you to read them and to understand them. There was a time years ago when people were all about talking to plants. Mm-hmm. Now, you can talk to plants. That's good. I'm sure I do all the time. But listening to plants is probably a better idea. And the language that plants speak is botany. They speak perfectly through their form. So if you have a basic knowledge of the life cycle of an angiosperm, say, which are the flowering plants, then you could look at it and you say, oh, it flowered. Now there's seed pods in the same place. The seed pods are still green. They're not ready. And then at a certain point, they'll get brown. Now, they get pretty tasty when they're brown, so you might want to be there before something else eats them or before they dehiss, which means they get really brown and dry and split open in order to disperse the seeds. So you see, if you just have that basic knowledge, you can go up to the plant and it will offer you what it has at the right time. It's a really beautiful thing.
This is way more massive than I was imagining.
Somehow. Yeah, it's huge here.
It is designed in a way that people can just wander. Let's go to the cold frame.
Yeah.
People come and take measurements of this system. Talk about low tech. So these are cold frames, zero electricity. Now, the trick is you don't use window glass. You use triple ply or double ply greenhouse polycarbonate, because that acts as an insulator, but also lets the light in. So here are my seedlings. They're doing okay.
So you've got like a garden box, but you've got these panels on top of it that are made out of greenhouse material, and they are acting as like low-to-the-ground little greenhouses that you built.
Right, but here's something you can't see. Underneath here is 6 inches of stone.
Uh-huh.
Oh.
Thermal mass.
Yeah.
Backed into a hill. Thermal mass. Facing south. Solar gain.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So I can do a lot with these. Things are kind of pokey because the weather hasn't been great. But as soon as we get a couple of 60-degree days, everything's going to shoot right up. And our germination is actually great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Even at these low temperatures, I've got zinnias over there because I am going to grow some cut flowers.
Mm-hmm.
I had this idea for my little farm stand. I mean, I'll be at the Ashfield Farmers Markets on Saturday, but for my little farm stand, I thought I'd do like a little cut flower business.
And you do have a little farm stand out by the road.
Yeah, it's just hanging out now. But I was thinking of doing something like Friday flowers and just doing flower arrangements every Friday and get people into that habit like they do in Europe, where you pick up your groceries for the weekend and you get a little bunch of flowers for the table or your sweetheart.
Love it.
All right, then.
Well, thanks for showing us around.
This is amazing.
Yeah, it really is amazing and inspirational to see and to know that you can learn how to do this on your own.
Absolutely. I'd be glad to help. Come visit sometime. Oh, I'm not sure if we can say this on public radio, but I am open on Sundays to the public. So stop by anytime, Sunday 9 to 5, or be in touch and we can work something out.
It's a really nice place to be.
Yeah.
Like, it's a really lovely place to walk around. And
the stonework and all the stupas, as you mentioned. It's beautiful.
And the dogs.
Somebody came yesterday, somebody pretty high up in the Buddhist hierarchy, and she noticed the stupas and she circumambulated them. The path is designed, so that's what you do with with stupas is you circumambulate them sometimes for days and pray. So I actually went with her Mother's Day. We circumambulated the stupas and prayed for all the mothers in the world.
Oh, I love that.